Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The most unique weekday undertaking to kick off last fall is back for a second stage this fall. Daily Blast Live runs on 50 stations from Boston to San Diego with a mix of news, culture happenings, and viewer feedback. Senior executive producer Bert DeBrow is Daily's top player, and he joins me next live from Denver. Also back this fall is The Guest Book, TBS's semi-anthology slice of weekly humor from an oceanside cottage. Season 2 begins Tuesday night. We'll have more from Frame creator executive producer Greg Garcia later this hour. Also ahead, News Note Quickies and our classic trivia question of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A wonderful Friday afternoon to you and all. Welcome once again to the program All About Television, 1 hour later than normal. Great to have you with us. Some wonderful guests coming your way in the next 60 minutes, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, raise your voice, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. We have another way that you can be involved. It's our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So get in the room, and we will hear you. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk or Spreaker screen. Follow the instructions of people be live with you. 59 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and Bert DeBrow from Daily Blast Live will join us after some News Note Quickies. Apple will present a product showcase October 30th from the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Will Apple TV get some overdue public love along with the company's new TV series venture? We'll see. Fox's new sitcom, The Cool Kids, will get 9 more episodes to complete its rookie season. The next episode debuts tonight after Last Man Standing. Comedian J.B. Smoove agreed to a talent development deal with 20th Century Fox Television. And in the last half hour, Warner Media announced it will terminate Super Deluxe, Turner's digital content unit. Super Deluxe created This Close, a dramedy carried on Sundance Now and featuring two deaf people who both created and produced the show, and Starn as well, and Chambers produced for Netflix. The story is breaking as we speak, and we'll have more details on our episode Monday. And that is News Notes for today. Grab your imagination cap for a second. What do you think it would take to produce a daily half hour or hour? Now put your imagination on full blast and figure what it would take to do 8 or 9 half hour daily episodes a day. That's right, 8 or 9 daily half hour episodes a day. Now you have some inkling of what happens every day on more than 50 stations across the country with Daily Blast Live. It's a unique program of news, talk, interactive activity, and the big thing is that no matter where you watch the program, it happens live. There are about 50 stations that are now carrying the program in its second year. It started on 10 stations around the country, and now it's being carried on WMUR in Boston, WMYD in Detroit, MAR in Baltimore, RTV in Indianapolis, and WTMJ in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And if you're not in any of the areas where the program is running on a TV station, you may be in love with your smart TV set or smart TV device. We will explore that shortly. But right now, joining me live from Denver, where the program is produced, is its senior executive producer, Bert DeBrow. Bert, thanks for joining us and taking the time.
It is my pleasure, Simon.
How do you do it? How do you and your staff come up with 8 or 9 hours a day where no matter where you watch it, it's live?
Well, first of all, it's important that we tell everybody that they're hours. They're not mainly half hours, they're hours. But how do we do it? If I thought about that, then I probably wouldn't be able to do it. We just seem to do it. We got a hardworking staff, and we get it done. And I think the most important part of it, and you already said it, is that whoever gets this show, wherever it is live. And it's the only show in daytime that we can say that about.
And when people see the program, for those who haven't seen it around the country, what do they get?
Well, they're getting what we like to say is what people are talking about, we're talking about. So it can be anything from Donald Trump to the American Music Awards. It really does run the gamut. If people are talking about it and it's trending on some level, you will hear us talking about it in a very, very opinionated way. I think that's important. It's a panel of four people, and you get to know them, not unlike a little bit. I mean, if to use a comparison, at least physically, it's sort of like The View in that you're seeing a table with four people, with very opinionated people, and it's interesting. It gets quite exciting.
And I understand there's more than four people who are hosting the program in its second season. So do you rotate the hosts that some will do one episode, some will do other episodes, and then everybody comes back for like the finale, the last show that's carried a particular day?
No. Each particular market, you know, out of, you know, the 60 or so markets, each market only sees their four people. So if you're in Boston, you may see one group of four people, and if you're in Buffalo, you may see another four people. We have eight people that do switch back and forth, but two or three are usually the same people on every panel.
Mm-hmm. How did Tegna make this show happen in the first place? It started over a year ago, and at the time, I'm sure there were a lot of people who were pretty skeptical about Can a group of stations do this on their own every single day? How did it all happen?
Well, I have to tell you, honestly, I didn't start this a year ago. But I can tell you that being in the syndication business, and I've been in the daytime world doing shows for longer than I choose to tell you about, I think people, station groups, finally got smart and said, you know what, instead of paying the syndicators and not really owning anything, we can do it. If we've got 20 stations or 50 stations or 60, why don't we develop it in a small way and then build it out, and then we own it, and the profit is much better for the particular station group. I think that was the philosophy on how these things start.
Mm-hmm. So what is a typical day like for you? Let's say it's first thing today. When does everybody get going into the office, into the studio, start working on shows, coming up with the lineup, and then take me through the day and how it works from live episode to live episode?
Well, people get into the office at about 4:30 or 5 Denver time, and we start to, you know, go through stories. What are we going to do? What are people talking about? What's trending, et cetera, et cetera. That group of people starts that process, then I get in usually around 7:30, and then we talk about those stories, we decide on what they're going to be, and then at 8 o'clock in the morning, the producers and the talent get in a conference room, and we talk about what's important about those stories, and then most importantly, we see what excites the panel. What excites the talent? If the talent has nothing to say about it, in other words, we don't just report these stories. We talk about these stories. So if the talent has nothing to say about it, we likely will not do that story. Or I'll even go as far as to say if they don't agree, or if they do agree, I should say, and there's no real conversation, we just don't talk about it. So anyway, we have that meeting. That goes till about 9 o'clock or so, something like that. And then everybody goes to work and starts to put it together and figure out how we're going to do it. In the interim, we may have some satellite feeds that we do. There may be a celebrity segment that we might tape, you know, for that particular day, and on and on and on and on. It doesn't end until 6 o'clock at night.
And when do the episodes actually go on? I understand it's like a block of episodes that go on in the afternoon and another block around early evening.
Well, and again, I'm going by Denver time. We do one half hour from 10:30 to 11. We do another half hour from 11:30 to 12, and then right into 12 to 1, 1 to 2, 2 to 3. Then, believe it or not, then lunch happens, and then we come back at 4, and we do a half hour access show from 5:30 to 6, our time.
You're hearing Bert DeBrow. He is the senior executive producer of the most unique daytime program around, Daily Blast Live. It is now being carried on 50 stations. It's syndicated by Sony with help from Tegna, one of the largest station groups or TV station owners in the country. Among some of the stations that are now starting it in year number two are WRTV in Indianapolis, Indiana, KMCI in Kansas City, Kansas, and WWBT in Richmond, Virginia. Bert joins us live from Denver, Colorado, where the program is produced every day, Monday through Friday, and he joins me this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker, also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment from Bert, don't be shy. Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have a great lineup of guests coming your way on three episodes of our program, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, all our regular times, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Coming up on Monday, you'll meet someone who has parlayed his iBreakfasts here in New York into a franchise called Startapalooza, and now he has his own TV program. It's called Break Through the Crowd. Think Shark Tank in a very unusual way. He's the producer and host, and where the show is carried is also unusual. It's the Indiegogo Network, ZEETV. Alan Brody will be our lead guest. And coming up on our special episode Wednesday, we will have the former Law & Order Special Victims Unit co-star, Tamara Tooney, who just starred in her own BET movie, Her Only Choice. Tamara Tooney, live from Pittsburgh, that's Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, a special edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And we'll tell you more about who's coming up on our episode a week from today, later on in this hour. What are some of the, as you're going through week to week, what are you finding the audience likes to hear about? What are some of the topics that really galvanize the audience?
Well, that's a hard thing to say. I mean, I think everybody for over the last year or so is talking about politics and how politics is helping or hurting this culture, depending on what side of the aisle you're on. So we do a lot of that, but we do it more from a cultural standpoint rather than a political standpoint. Also, any kind of celebrity news, breakups, etc., is important. Certainly, we talk about the whole world of race and what's going on there and how it affects our lives. All the most topics that you would think resonate with people, that's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. What kind of background do the hosts have?
Oh, God, various backgrounds. Jeff Schroeder was on Big Brother. As a matter of fact, his wife won. Sam Shocker, who I would say is our main host, has been hosting television. I used to do the Dr. Drew Pinsky show for CNN. She was with me there. We have a lady by the name of Erica Cobb, who came from radio. Tori Shulman, stand-up comic. Al Jackson, another stand-up comic who has toured. So all different facets of this business.
As I mentioned, most of the stations that are running Daily Blast are TEGNA stations. Do the TEGNA local news departments or national news, they supply you any footage? They help you out in terms of story development or story suggestions?
We're definitely a family, so we're connected to them, and we're working with them all the time, not just from a broadcast standpoint, but digitally, because I think it's important to note that we are on Facebook and YouTube all day. So if you don't get this program on broadcast, you're not one of the 60 or so cities, you can find us on YouTube or on Facebook, and you can watch the show that way as well. So we're connected to our stations in a big, big way.
Yeah. You just did my next question, because it's my understanding that you're now on Facebook Watch. So if people have smart TV sets and smart devices and they're not in the area of the 50 stations that carry the program, they can see the show live on their smart TV sets or smart devices like Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV.
Yes, yeah. You just, for the most part, you can also download Daily Blast Live. There is an app. And if you download the Daily Blast Live app, there's a part there that says Watch Us Now. There we are. So you can't get rid of us. We're all over the place.
How does the audience get involved from episode to episode? What kind of ways do you provide while the program is on for viewers to give you feedback, ask questions of the hosts or the guests, or respond to whatever you're talking about?
Well, through Twitter, through Facebook, and let me try and explain that. It's very unique. If you're watching the show on television, and we say, like any other show, we'll be right back and we go to a commercial, then you see a commercial. But if you're watching it on Facebook or you know, any of those other platforms, when you hear our host say, we'll be right back, we go to black and then pop right back up, and we're now showing you what's going on digitally in our studio. So whereas we may be having a conversation about something and we end with a commercial, if you're watching it online, we pop right back up and that conversation continues. I'll give you a crazy for instance. Yesterday we were talking about something, and I won't bore you with what we were talking about, but the information that we had was a little bit wrong, and it had to do with Kristen Bell. And Kristen was watching, saw that we tweeted something. She tweeted back to us and corrected us. We went right on the air live within seconds, showed Kristen's tweet, said, and she sort of set us straight on what we were doing and telling us that. And we read her tweet on the air. She saw it and then tweeted back and thanked us for getting it right. So everything happens right at the moment.
Hmm. Is that a rare example of something like that, or have you had other examples where celebrities or viewers will call and say, I saw what you said, and I have some updated information, or there's an error to get corrected?
All the time. I mean, we went on the air several weeks ago and had a whole show, an entire show planned, and the Bill Cosby verdict happened at 5 after 12, and we go on at 12. We scrapped the entire show and did that entire hour on Bill Cosby and that whole verdict and everything that was going on right there. So again, the fact that we're live really pays off in situations like that. And for instance, you could have a Steve Harvey show, you could have Ellen, you could have The View. Those shows are recorded. So if those things happen while their show is going on, their show continues. Ours does not continue. We talk about it right then and there.
How often do you scrap a show when a story breaks, or sort of add on here, for something like the recent hearings of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, when you deal with a hearing situation that runs for several hours and includes recess and so forth? How do you deal with a story that breaks as you're going on?
Well, we may start with what we normally have, and like I told you in the 8 o'clock meeting, but as things are going on, if something happens, as you mentioned, with Kavanaugh or whatever, we've got people watching this, you know, as this is happening. So we have a segment that we call At This Moment that we literally will cut to one of our producers right there, and they're sitting in front of the computer, and they will tell us exactly what's going on at that moment. Now, if it's something that involves more conversation, we will cut back to the panel and continue that conversation. Or if it doesn't require conversation, we've at least let the audience know what's going on, let them know that we're tracking it, and we'll keep them up to date. Certainly with the latest storm that we had last week, we were doing that, you know, whatever it was, every 15 minutes, every 20 minutes, every hour. So if you want to know what's going on, you watch us.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you're quite busy with the recent two hurricanes, Hurricane Florence in the Carolinas, and then, of course, Hurricane Michael in Florida.
Yes, absolutely. That's what I was referring to. So again, we're right there. And if something happens within seconds, we're on it. So it's really quite unique, because you just don't see that during the day unless you're watching a news program. But we are not a news program. We're a little bit of everything.
Daily Brass Live. It is now running live in all time zones at different times depending on the station that runs it. It's on 50 stations across the country, most owned by Tegna, one of the largest station groups in the country. But this year, for season two, it is also running on 14 stations that are not owned by Tegna. Stations like WMUR in Boston, WMYD in Detroit, Michigan, WMAR in Baltimore, and WRTV in Indianapolis, Indiana. And it is also through Facebook Watch available to you if you're not in those areas by way of smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Bert DeBrow is the senior executive producer of the program. He's live with us from where the show is produced, Denver, Colorado, Monday through Friday. And he's with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tommy Appleton, we're you live from New York, 59 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for Bert, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. One week from today on Tomorrow Be Televised, a rare live interview with Daniel Tibbetts, the president of El Rey Network. That's the TV network owned by filmmaker Robert Rodriguez. It's one of his fewest interviews he's done ever since he joined El Rey some time back. And we'll find out what is going on with the Satellite Network and what programming is coming up for 2019 and beyond. It's an exclusive interview you will only hear here next Friday on Tlaib Televised. And we have just signed up the executive producer, one of them, of Amazon's podcast adaptation, Lore, the podcast that got great reviews on Amazon last year. It's coming back for a second season, and we will have one of the executive producers, Sean Crouch. He will join us live along with Daniel Tibbetts of El Rey Network. It's an hour you do not want to miss. Next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What has surprised you so far about the run of Daily Blast, both the way it's handled, but also the audience reaction?
You ask what has surprised me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, I'd have to say not a lot, because when I walked into this, I felt very, very good about it, and I feel even better about it now. So I can't say nothing has surprised me. What I will tell you, though, is these guys that are up on that panel, you know, Jeff, Tori, Sam, Al, Erica, they are as good, if not better, than anybody that you're seeing on television now. So like anything else in this business, once you get it out there and once it's exposed, then people see it. So our job now is to get it out there because these guys, they're excellent. And I know that sounds like a father talking about his kids or something, but they really are.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see daytime television going? If programs like this continue to expand their reach, we're also seeing other types of shows that station groups are offering, not just for syndication, but also for this whole smart TV set, smart device universe. Where do you see a daytime TV going? And also, because more and more smart TV sets and devices, Bert, have voice-activated capability, artificial intelligence built in, Alexa, Siri, and so forth, where you can control how you watch and use the set with your voice, do you think we're on the verge of an interactive television era?
Well, you know, I'm not really sure. I can tell you this much, that I don't think most people at home in daytime, because you asked me about daytime, and the most people at home that watch daytime, they don't really want to work. They want to watch. They want to be compelled to watch. I think we found that years ago. I was with a company for Warner Brothers called Cube Television, which was the first interactive television service where you really could do everything that you're talking about. And nobody really wanted to do it. So in the daytime world, in the daytime syndication television world, I think as long as you compel people to watch and you're a relevant television show and you've got the kind of talent that connects and breaks through, I think that will always be there. What will happen in the digital world, that certainly remains to be seen.
I covered Cube when I started covering television way back in 1981 or so. Does Daily Blast Live sort of rejuvenate some of those interactive skills that you and your team, a lot of great people came out of Cube from Warner Amex in Columbus, Ohio, and then other parts of the Midwest. Do you get a sense that some of your skills that you learned at Cube sort of come into play with Daily Blast?
Yeah. Boy, you did your homework, didn't you? Not many people remember Cube. I think just intuitively they do. I'm not sure that I think about it all that much, but I've always been the same in everything that I've ever done. Is I always feel like a person at home has got a remote control near them, and I've got to get them to stop. It's my job to make them stop. And whatever we can do within reason and within good taste to get them to do that is what I feel like my job is. And along with that, get some good information out. That's sort of the way I look at it.
I mentioned, of course, at the top that you're now on 50 stations. Sony is syndicating your program. Is there any chance that before the year is out or sometime early in 2019 that you'll get a station on in New York, in L.A., or Chicago, the three major big markets?
As my mother would say, from your mouth to God's ears. We certainly hope so. But you know what? Doing a show like this and building it slowly is really, really, really important. It's why you see so many shows go off the air after a year because they just don't have their act together yet. We can take this show and what we've done is marinate it and make a mistake here and make a mistake there, find out what the audience wants and have it go out slowly. In the other shows that I've done over the years, that's pretty much what we did, and it proved to be very successful. You see that now with other shows as well. Wendy Williams started that way. I did a show years ago called Sally, Jesse, Raphael. We started that way. I think Tegna's got it right. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, and that Wendy received an award yesterday here in New York from the National Association of Broadcasters, the Impact Awards. It was an AV show in New York at the Javits Center. I had a chance to see her in person along with the Mort Marks, Howard Bernstein, the head of Denmark Mercury, her syndicator, part of Lionsgate. And they mentioned the same thing, that it was Fox that took a chance on Wendy being Wendy, as she likes to say. And it was really around the second or third season that the show really developed its voice. And now 10 years later, it's one of the top daytime shows. And it's, as you said, Bert, you can go back to the days of Phil Donahue and Sally, Jesse, Raphael. And these were shows that started at the local level that graduated ultimately little by little in the syndication, and then at some point finally found their national voice.
Well, yeah, and as I said, and I don't know how many people remember, but I started Sally October 17th, 1983. I don't remember what I did yesterday, but that I remember. And that's how we did it. We started it in St. Louis, and we built it slowly. And I will tell you, had we gone on nationally, originally, we wouldn't have been on the air. And we were on the air over 20 years. So, and you're right, Phil started, Donahue started in Dayton, and I did other shows the same way. And it always amazes me that companies spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to get these shows, and they think they've got them right, and they don't have them right, and then they scratch their head to try to figure out why it went off the air. I applaud Tegna for doing this and having the foresight and the smarts to know how to do this. They are they're a wonderful company. And no, I don't get anything for saying that. I'm telling you the truth.
Now, Tegna has been, in the last couple of years, one has taken some great chances. Another show they do, by the way, I want to mention, is called Sister Circle, which is running nationally on TV1, but it's also running on Tegna stations. It's a noontime live talk show, which is women-oriented, and is hosted entirely by women, women of color. And it's a terrific show, by the way. And they've also done other shows, including a local talent show that was syndicated on weekend nights on their stations, too. So they're one of those groups that really are out in front of trying to expand what you can do as a station group in original programming. And, of course, your show is a superb example of that.
Go ahead, Bert. Let me just give credit to the people, Dave Lugi, who runs the company, and Lisa Kritos. These are people that really know this world and understand this world, and their names deserve to be mentioned because they really do know what they're doing. And Daily Blast Live will prove that. You'll see.
For sure. Daily Blast Live is now available on 50 stations across the country. It is syndicated by Sony, and some of the new stations that are running in this its second season are WMYB in Detroit, WTMU in Milwaukee, and WWBT in Richmond, Virginia. Thank you for listening for where it is running. And remember, not all stations are running it at the same time. But also, if you're not in the market where it's running on a TV station, you can catch it live on YouTube. And if a smart TV set a smart TV device from anywhere in the country, you can catch it also on Facebook Watch. Multiple editions running each day. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, dailyblastlive.com. That's dailyblastlive.com, and yes, you can download individual episodes as well from there. Bert DeBrow, the Senior Executive Producer of Daily Blast, thanks again for joining us. Congratulations to you and everybody on your cast and crew at Tegna for a really unique effort in interactive, remarkable daytime and early evening television, and hopefully this second season continues what will be a great long run.
Thank you, Simon. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Bert. You and everybody have a sensational weekend.
You too.
Take care. Bert DeBrow, Senior Executive Producer of Daily Blast Live, joining us from where the program is produced in Denver, Colorado. More tomorrow's televised coming your way, but first some fine words from the folks at Audible.com. One of the most provocative audio experiences you can get is now available through Audible.com. It's called 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. It's a book written by Yuval Noel Harari, and you can get it right now by just getting involved with a trial run at Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 180,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing this on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. You'll want a free audio book, 1 month trial of the service, great customer service for fine folks at Amazon.com. So if you've never heard audio in quite the way Audible.com does it for you, why not do it now? And hear for yourself why Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. For that free audio book and 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. When we come back, we're in Los Angeles, and we're going to hear one of the big new players, recently speaking, in the world of situation comedy. He has groundbroken a lot in that field, from Raising Hope on Fox to My Name is Earl on NBC. And his latest work, now going into season two next week, The Guest Book. Greg Garcia joins us when we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio in the galaxy, www.blogtalkradio.com and Spreaker.com. Together, we reach over 30 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Every day, BTR brings you CUTV News Radio with Jim Masters and, yes, the voice of the People's Court, Doug Llewellyn. It's on every day, various times. Check it out. CUTV News Radio. It's not your normal news, delivered not the normal way. And it's all right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. We are coming your way live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Hope you're having a wonderful Friday afternoon, getting ready for a superb weekend. 59 degrees at the top of the hour. Another great guest coming your way in this half hour, and we invite you as always to be part of the program. And all it takes is your voice and using this number, 646-652-2906. Or use this chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And later this half hour, before we leave you, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week, three prizes in play if you come up with the correct answer. My next guest is one of the great major players now in the world of situation comedy. Whenever he does a program, he usually opens the door on a side of comedy you don't normally see, whether it's Raising Hope on Fox, or his first big breakthrough, My Name is Earl, on NBC. His latest work starts its second season this Tuesday night at 10 p.m. on TBS. It's The Guest Book. It's a semi-anthology about what goes on at an oceanside resort. And joining me live from Los Angeles is its creator, executive producer, and director, Greg Garcia. Greg, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. We appreciate you coming aboard. Talk about The Guest Book, season two. How excited are you that it's back on TBS and a pretty good time period, too?
Yes, I'm excited. I mean, we had such a great time doing season one, and you know, then that ends, and then you kind of cross your fingers and you hope that enough people watch it that they'll do a season two. So when they said they wanted to do that, I was super excited, season one was in the mountains, and then we've decided to shake things up, and we're going to the beach in season two, really excited, but I can't wait for people to check it out.
Mm-hmm. You have always been known for cutting-edge comedy, whether character comedy is in My Name is Earl, same thing with Raising Hope on Fox. This one, you sort of not only cut-edge in character, but you cut-edge in format. I like to call it a semi-anthology show because it's location-based, where you have ongoing characters, but you also have different plots and different guest stars from episode to episode. How did the idea from the guest book get in your head?
So basically, I was going up to the mountains when I was doing Raising Hope, and I was writing a bunch of, going up there to write because it was nice and quiet. And I went up there once, and I couldn't think of anything. And I look over, and they have a guest book that people sign, you know, and they said, oh, we had a good time. The kids went sledding. My mother-in-law got sick. The dishwasher's broken, blah, blah, blah. So I decided to grab the book and write a story, just a fake story. I ended up writing a 30-page story in the book just to freak out the next people and the owners. And I took it back with me to the set of Raising Hope, and I read it to the actors. I made a copy for myself, read it to the actors. We all laughed. And then over the course of the next couple of years, I kept going up, and every time I was away, I would write things into these books and just leave them there. So eventually I thought this would be a great TV show, just about a cabin in the woods, and each week a different crazy story happens. And then, like you said, the idea of having some – it's part anthology because – mostly it's an anthology show with a different cast every week. But then I thought, just to give people a good reason to watch all of them instead of just one, I have like a through line of the regular cast that lives in the mountain town, and in season two it'll be a new regular cast in a beach town.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to move the action from the mountains to the oceans?
Well, that's interesting, because when I went in and pitched it to TBS, all I had was these short stories that I'd left in people's guest books, and I was just saying all kinds of things when I was in there, and I said one of the things you could do is you could move locations every year. You could have it at the mountains, you could go to the beach, you could be at a New York penthouse that somebody's renting on Airbnb, and you could shake it up. But then I kind of forgot about that I said that, and we did season one, and people liked it, and the characters were great, and the actors were great, and I started writing episodes up in the mountains again for season two. But then when TBS picked it up, they said, hey, let's do what you said. Let's go to the beach. And I was like, oh, I forgot I said that. And we talked about it for a while and the pros and the cons, and it's a little bit of a risk having to start over, and there's costs involved and building new sets and whatnot. But they seemed really excited about it, and creatively I got on board that it would be fun to change it every season. And so that's what we did. And hopefully people stick with us. I think they'll like it. We have some characters from season one that make the trip to the beach with us, and then we have some reoccurring people from season one that come back and visit. So there is some continuity.
We'll get to those characters in a moment, as well as a really sensational lineup of guest stars you've got for season two. But first, were you inspired by any classic anthology shows, whether The Millionaire or Alfred Hitchcock Presents or Twilight Zone, in terms of the way you wanted to structure your anthology?
I would say, you know, what I think I probably was inspired by the most, which would probably be The Love Boat. I mean, The Love Boat was a show that I loved as a kid growing up. I mean, that was a big deal. On, parents would go out, we'd get a babysitter, and we'd watch The Love Boat and Fantasy Island. And, you know, this is, I mean, certainly in tone and comedy, it's nothing like the Love Boat at all. However, when you think about the fact that you have a stable group of characters that kind of live in this town, just like the people that worked on the boat, and you would tell some smaller stories with them, or they would get involved with the people that come on the boat, but each episode you'd have these guest stars that would come in, and it would really be their show. So I would say of the things that I've watched anthology-wise, that would probably be the closest to what I'm doing. And then in recent times, like shows like Black Mirror and High Maintenance, I just love those shows, and the idea that it can be something different every week is really exciting as a viewer for me.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into the continuing characters first. You have three of them. Jimmy Cattrall, who comes out of American Vandal, which is Netflix's most acclaimed new shows of the last year, just started season two. You've got Kimiko Glenn. Some here know her from Orange is the New Black, but some here in New York know her as one of the co-stars of the Broadway musical Waitress from Sarah Bareilles. And you also have Dan Burney from Fargo. That's a very interesting bunch of people who you would know if you see them mostly from either dramedies or dramas. And it seems like you're giving them an opportunity to exercise their comedic chops.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, starting with Jimmy Cattrall, my son was a big fan of his from just YouTube. He has this YouTube series that they're getting ready to do another season of it, I think, on Facebook. But it's called The Real Bros of Simi Valley, and that's how he came up on my radar, is because my kid was just dying laughing and showing him to me. And then I saw him on American Vandal and watched that whole thing, and I just thought he was great. So when I wrote this, you know, kind of handyman, surfer bum character, he instantly came to mind. So luckily he was available, and he's hilarious. Kimiko, I certainly was familiar with her from Orange is the New Black because I watched that show. And I think she has some comedic stuff in that show, not that that's a straight comedy or anything. And I hadn't seen her in New York, but I entered the Broadway world for a second myself, and so I was aware of her being in Waitress. And I think that we tried to work with each other before on a show called Super Clyde, a pilot that I did, and that didn't work out. So we were happy to finally work together. And Dan was just somebody that came in and auditioned and was hilarious. It wasn't until after his audition that I said, he's our guy for sure, that I went back and realized, oh, my God, he was on Fargo, and I loved him on Fargo. So, you know, yeah, those are our three new regulars. We have two coming back from last year, Carly Gibson and Eddie Steeples, but those are our three new ones, and I couldn't be happier with how it turned out.
We're talking about The Guest Book. It is the second year of TBS comedy, and it premieres next Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and then it will go to 10:30 p.m. for all future episodes. And we're talking with the creative executive producer and director as well. You know him from such shows as Raising Hope on Fox, My Name is Earl on NBC. That was his breakthrough show. We're talking about Greg Garcia. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. So I'm evaluating you live from New York. Glad you're with us Friday afternoon. Hope all is well wherever you are catching us on Blog Talk Radio Speaker. And you have a question or comment for Greg, don't be shy. Make your move and call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, coming up next Wednesday on a special edition of the show, at our regular hour, 15 Eastern New Pacific, we will have the former co-star of Law & Order SVU, Tamara Tunney, will be with us. She just did a BET movie that she started called Her Only Choice. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about her role around the 20 years of Law & Order SVU, now on NBC Thursday nights at 10. And also on the program, we'll introduce you to a up-and-coming television network that will be on smart TV sets and smart devices in 2020, but first premiere overseas next year. It's called Water Bear Network, and we'll talk with Ellen Windeworth. She will join us live from overseas next Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, with Tamara Tunney, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Incidentally, Greg, this series also has you reunite with somebody from My Name is Earl, Eddie Steeples, who was on your series, your first series.
Yeah, Eddie was on My Name is Earl, and, you know, the funny thing about Eddie is he came in from My Name is Earl, and in the pilot, I think he had, like, two words. He just said, like, hey, Earl, and that was it, and I'd found him, I'd enjoyed him in a commercial for Office Max, I believe it was, where he played the rubber band man, and he just always cracked me up in that. I loved his look. I loved his energy. So then, as we went on with My Name is Earl, you know, I realized what a good actor the guy is, and so he just got more and more as the show went along. He did a couple episodes of Raising Hope because I just love working with him, and then when it came time to do The Guest Book, I wanted to make sure that I had something for him, and he came in. We had a blast, and then when we went to season two, he was definitely something that I wanted to keep going from season one, and I see him as a reoccurring threat as long as we can do this show. Because I think people really enjoy seeing him, and he's a joy to work with.
Speaking of Raising Hope, Greg, your star of that series, Martha Plimpton, who I first saw in a wonderfully underrated movie called Running on Empty with Judd Hirsch and Christine Lottie, an incredible film, by the way, that Turner Classic Movies runs from time to time. If you can get to see that, see it. You get a sense of the kind of talent that Martha Plimpton has turned out to be, really special. But she's a guest star on this second season. So is Will Arnett. So is Lisa Rinna from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And, of course, Dancing with the Stars. And before that, long-running star of daytime dramas. You got Olivia Hudson. You got Allison Tolman, who was, of course, so super in Fargo's first season. Matt Faxon from Friends of from College. A lot of great guest stars. I'm wondering, how do you set them all up for episodes? Do they, for example, come and say, I want to be in this episode or that episode? Or do you figure, you know, I want them in this one because I think their character would be better for the kind of storyline I wanted to do?
Well, it's kind of, you know, it's different with everybody. I mean, there's some people that when I sit down to write the script, I have worked with people in the past, and I think, all right, this person will be great for this character. So like a Will Arnett, a Martha Plimpton, Michael Rapaport from last season, Jamie Presley, Shannon Woodward, you know, people that I've worked with in the past, I kind of just picture them in my head. I let them know, hey, I got this thing for you, and if the schedule works out, they usually want to come, and it's a week's work, and if they have time, we do it, and we have a blast. And then there's the scripts that I just write, and I have to go out and figure out who would be good in them. And last year we got very lucky with Jenna Fisher, who came in and did an episode, and I had never worked with her before. This year, Pete Davidson from SNL does an episode, Matt Walsh from Veep, Michael K. Williams, Omar from The Wire. I mean, these are all people that I didn't have a relationship with, but thank goodness they liked the script. I sent them a note. We talk about it if we need to talk about it and the character and whatnot. But we've been really lucky that we've been able to get some really good cast members. And then I think what happens is, like last year, Jenna Fisher came. She had a great time. And then when we went out to Oliver Hudson to be in an episode, they do a show together. So he kind of said to her, oh, didn't you do this show? And she talked about what a great time she had, and that helps grease the wheels a little for us.
Mm-hmm. What kind of storylines did you decide to do this year that in particular were inspired by the new location, doing it in an Oceanside resort?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me think about that. So, you know, some of the stories were just written. They're coming off actual guest book stories that I've written in the cabin, in the woods, or there were some that I wrote in some beach locations. I think one in particular was one with Michael Rapaport when he comes back to visit, was that one that I thought of in a beach location, and it was more of like a solid vacation destination that he wanted to take his family to kind of show them that he's cured his OCD counting. And what happens is they ultimately can't come, so he latches on to another family that's vacationing. And I think that's something that was a little bit more of a vacation destination story that I needed to do, whereas the mountains felt a little bit more lonely up there once you got into that cabin, where at the beach we found that it felt like much more of a populated world.
All the episodes this season, Greg, was there one or two in particular that once you got it off the typewriter, off the computer and on the page, you thought, this is maybe one of my best work of anything I've done for any series. Anything comes to mind?
Did you say that is some of my best work or some of my work, not my best work?
No, some of your best work. Some of your best work.
Oh, gosh. I think that there was because there was a couple that I finished and I go, oh, this isn't great yet. I gotta keep working on this one. But I would say that it's always tough to choose. But there's an episode this year. It's episode 4. It'll premiere in week 3 of this season because we're gonna double pump the first two next Tuesday. But it was a story that I wrote in someone's guest book and left it there. And it was a very long story and it was very. It's very sweet, but it's also crazy. It's about about an old guy who comes to visit his nephew because he's dying and ends up kind of stumbling into his nephew's birthday ecstasy party. And it really it's a wild episode, but at the same time, it ended up having a great deal of heart. Paul Dooley, 90 years old, you know, from Breaking Away and 16 Candles and Everything Under the Sun, came in and played this character and was just amazing. So, and then also we got to... With the help of my DP, we got to really shoot it in some ways that were a lot of fun. So I wouldn't say it came off of my laptop and I thought, wow, this is going to be amazing. I was happy with it. But once you put in the cast and we shot it and the editors did an amazing job with this one in particular, it's certainly one that I kind of sit back and go, wow, that certainly exceeded all my expectations of what the finished product would be.
Mm-hmm. When do you have a writer's room as well as a director or crew? And if you do, what kind of atmosphere did you want to have in that writer's room? Or what kind of atmosphere from director did you record? You did some of the episodes too that you wanted to have that would be sort of reflective of this new location.
Well, I got to say, I mean, this you know, it's an interesting show for me because unlike My Name is Earl and Raising Hope, where we had about 16 writers on staff, and it was a big collaborative effort and a lot of fun. This show in particular, season one, there were no other writers. It was just me. I write all 10 episodes, so, I mean, it's not much of a vibe going on in the room. It's just me, and then I give it to a couple friends that give me a couple jokes to put in there. And then season two, I had somebody that was assisting the first season, and she was getting all kinds of great jokes in and helping me out with stories. So I made her a writer in season two. But it's not like a regular show where we have a writer's room. I basically write the episodes, and then she goes through them and gives me notes and thoughts and pitches, and then I do another pass after that. But and then as far as the directors, you know, I'm working with a lot of directors. I'm working with directors I worked with in the past. This year, I directed 6 of the 10, but then a guy named Samir Rahim came in, and he had done 2 episodes last year, and we got along great. And this amazing director named Rebecca Asher did 2 episodes that was actually a script supervisor on Raising Hope and then started to direct some episodes, and now you can't book her. She's working everywhere. Everybody in the world loves her.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Greg Garcia. He is one of the great contemporary comedy writers for television and comedy producers for television. My Name is Earl was his breakthrough show on NBC. Then came Raising Hope, along with anyone with Moffat Clifton on Fox. And now it's the guest book, about to go into second season next Tuesday on CBS. 2 episodes back-to-back, 10 to 11 o'clock. on next Tuesday, and then from then on, it's one episode a week at 10:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Brady Jordan's live from Los Angeles this half hour on Swampy Televive, and we're delighted that you are here, wherever you are, on Blog Talk Radio Speaker and the IR Radio Podcast Network. So I'm at Mount Weezy live from New York, where it's 59 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for Greg in our remaining moments, give that call, 646-652-2906, or head to our chat room, Simon Apple 04. My name is coming up shortly. Our Cracker Trivia question of the week. We got three prizes in play, and you could win if you're first with that correct answer. And remember, coming up next Friday on Swampy Televised, Daniel Tibbetts, the president of El Rey Network, the network headed by famed filmmaker Robert Rodriguez. What's happening with that channel? Well, Daniel's going to make a very rare and live TV or radio interview with us next Friday. And also, we'll have one of the executive producers of the critically acclaimed podcast adaptation on Amazon, Lore, about to go into season two. Sean Crunch will join us. That's all next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. It's going to be a great hour in store for you. Even more exciting when you're involved right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Greg, we are wrapping up Diversity Week here in New York. It's the week where the TV industry celebrates diversity. A lot of great activities in the Marriott Marquis Hotel, CTAM, Limited Cable, NAMIC, the TV Industry Diversity Association, Walter Cates Foundation, NAB Show New York, and the Diversity Association. But where do you stand, where do you see diversity going in television? What kind of progress do you think we've made, particularly this year? And then we'll take where we have to go.
Well, I can't really say on a year-to-year basis because I do watch TV. I don't watch a lot of network TV, and I've noticed that a lot of the attention towards diversity, a lot of times it's networks because it seems like a lot of the other places are perhaps doing better anyway, or they have so much product that, you know, you have a show like Ozark, which is not diverse at all, but it's like, okay, but that's about the Ozarks, and they don't seem to get any grief about it, and they have so much product that perhaps more people are represented. But I do feel like, you know, it's a very important thing that the studios and networks are very aware of, you know, and as a creator, you're aware of it as well. And you definitely want to, you know, represent everybody. I think, personally, on the guest book, we try very hard to see all walks of life and not to stick to one thing.
Mm-hmm. One thing I do see, though, Greg, actually two things. One, I get the sense that there's now forward progress on a lot of levels. Because you're seeing more networks that are using smart TV sets and smart devices that are diverse, like AfroLife.tv, which is trying to be the Netflix of African Americans, and Reverie, which is trying to be the Netflix of the gay and lesbian community. You're seeing individual directors like Ava DuVernay or producers say, I'm going to have all my episodes, and most of my episodes directed by women or women of color. You're seeing producers like Glenn Mazzara and Ryan Murphy take the initiative and say, I want women of color, I want people of color to direct as many episodes as possible. You see a show like Walking Dead, which has had a great track record from the get-go of directors who are women and people of color. The executive producer is now a woman of color, Angela Kang, who started as a writer and then a producer and so on. You get this sense that there is more forward progress than ever, and with more outlets and more outlets to come, like Apple and Disney's upcoming streaming service, and maybe Costco, maybe Walmart, that for the first time, I think you'd say that the future is bright. You have to work. We have to work on it. We have to work at it on all levels. But it just seems that there is a lot of forward momentum now that there has not been before. Another opportunity has been the fact you see more women and people of color forming their own production companies and getting deals, whether it's Gina Rodriguez or America Ferrari or Regina King or Viola Davis. And they're starting to get deals with the networks and with production companies, the long term, and channel rise with Netflix and so on.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing that's making the most impact. Because, you know, as somebody who hires writers and directors, I certainly can keep my eye out for things. It's never something that I've been necessarily like proactive. But then when I look back on the things that I do, I'm like, oh well, I feel like I've hired diverse, and I hire women, and you know, the woman that runs my production company, she's a woman. The only other writer on the guest book is a woman. You know, my directors were both either female or diverse this season. So it's like, but I didn't go out and think about it as much. I just hired the best person for the job, but I've been happy with you know, I can look back and feel good about it. But I think, like you mentioned, the biggest thing is those companies making these big deals, more big deals with diverse people, because they're certainly going to have an eye out for that. There's going to be more opportunities for everybody. And I think that they're also seeing that there's a very large audience for the shows that they're doing.
The Guest Book, season number 2, begins next Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Pacific time, 2.5 hours back-to-back on TBS. And the following Tuesday and from then on with the rest of season 2, 10:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Check your local news for where TBS available in the area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the promo online, TBS.com. The Guest Book, second season premiere, next Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Greg Garcia, creator, executive producer, and director of The Guest Book, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on the second season. Hopefully, many more seasons to come, not just from The Guest Book, but all of your work as well. Greg, I've enjoyed your career for years. My name is Earl Raising Hope and so forth. You're a terrific talent, and hopefully many, many more great shows in years to come.
Oh, thanks a lot, buddy. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And as I promote the show, I also give away things on Twitter. So if you follow me on Twitter, you get prizes and cash. So check it out.
There you go. You got the invite. Greg, take care. All the very best.
All right. Thanks, bud.
Greg Garcia from The Guest Book, joining us live from Los Angeles. Now, quickly, our classic trivia question of the week. And if you are first with the correct answer, by the time the weekend is over, you get the CD of Larry Milk on the Audience Network, the brand new season just started, the Cesar Millan, Love My Pitbull CD from Max Joe Wild, and the 6 CD set of John Edward, Developing Your Own Psychic Power. The question, name the New York City neighborhood where the Bluebloods family led by Tom Selleck gathers at the end of every episode for dinner. Name the New York City neighborhood that Bluebloods family gathers at the end of the episode for dinner. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, enclose your name and your mailing address. If you missed the question just now, we'll post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter, UBC Simon, TWBT. Coming up Monday on Smart Televised, Alan Brody from the new Z TV series, Break Through the Crowd, and more. If you came in here on today's program and want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version on iTunes, Apple TV and Springer's podcast app, and, of course, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio, Speaker iHeartRadio. Our production associate is Candace Williams, and he chose Blog Talk Radio's general manager, which is our executive content producer. The co-founders of the very enterprise are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com, an Amazon company, and proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For the pre-audio book and my trial we talked about earlier, it's audibletrial.com/televised. I want to again congratulate everybody involved with Diversity Week New York, Women in Cable, Name It, Walter Cates Foundation, NAB Show New York, and Diversity Network. Wonderful activity all week long. For sure, diversity is marching on all over the place in this expanding television universe. But tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. A fantastic weekend. We're back at a regular time on Monday, 3:30 Eastern New Pacific. You know where, blogs over here. Don't forget, we're on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And by the way, through this weekend, please keep your thoughts and prayers for the folks who are still dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane Michael in Florida and elsewhere throughout the South. And whatever you're doing this weekend, please make it safe and make it great. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.